B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out of town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
From the Town Fair Tire Studio, Gasper and Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Needless to say, I am obsessed now with that terrible show that's on us. You know, we run the Fox Sports radio feed before we come on here from 10 to 1. Hopefully that will continue. Hopefully I can hang on to my cushy employment and Chris won't leave me now that he has his new cushy gig at WCVB-TV, the new face of sports on Channel 5. But that show, you know, I half paid attention to it when I came in and, you know, made fun of it last week when we started. But really, like, I came in earlier this week just because I finally wanted to leave my house after being trapped in it all week. I wanted to do a little bit of show prep. That is unbelievable. Like, I've always known ever since I got into radio 20-plus years ago now that it's a industry, no matter what the format, from alt-rock to regular rock to top 40 to this, sports talk, whatever, political talk. It's a business full of C-minus students, not a lot of real talent. A lot of just people skating by, a lot of kiss-assers that, you know, climb the corporate ladder. But that might be the worst. I am a connoisseur of bad radio, obsessed with it. Like, it gets stuck in me like a fang. Like, I'll just listen to it, just get more angry. That show, the Fellas with Anthony Gargano and Lincoln Kennedy, holy crap. Now, I might actually start getting up extra earlier, Chris, so I can listen to it. Oh, my God.
Only you, Jim.
And I had to look the guy up, like, with his fake laughs. Like, Lincoln, how are you doing, bro? What kind of mask would you have right now, these COVID times? What do you got? That I literally heard, that was something that literally came out of the man's mouth. What do you got? What kind of mask would you design right now? Let's go a little round table. And I was like, listen to him. I'm like, I bet he's a fathead, a big fathead. And sure enough, I look him up, a big fathead. Oh, my God. Particularly cruel, Chris. And hi, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Jim?
You can tell
it's going to be one of those days.
It's the only day I get to have a release. Particularly cruel, given this increasingly dark timeline that we are living, that we had to wake up to snow this morning. Just when you think it can't get any worse, actual snow to stick to your car this morning. And as I tweeted last night, because I knew the snow was coming, I said, over my dead body, was I actually going to clean it off? And I know, you're one of those? No, not typically. During the winter, I'll clean off the snow. But now, it's spring. It's spring in hell. And over my dead body, am I cleaning the snow off my car? I made a small little eye-shaped hole on my windshield, and then I was off. Didn't even clean the back windshield. And if you saw walking in, a lot of the snow is still on there.
Oh, I did. I saw it. Yeah, I saw it. I mean, I did a little more than that. I cleaned the back windshield completely, and I cleaned 3/4 of the front windshield and let the windshield wipers do the rest. But I still had snow on the sides, and yeah, you know what? Every time I hit the brakes, that snow off my roof, yeah, it's flying your direction.
And it's a speeder's paradise out there. I don't have to tell you. It's been one of the tiny silver linings of this. Like, it's 100 everywhere I go when I do go out. Like, to come here, 100. Like, if I get pulled over, fine.
Really, I have to take your route because that's not what I'm experiencing. My commute is typically like this. Why the are there so many people on the road? Like,
oh, really?
What's going on? Like, how are all these people essential? Are they all going to the supermarket? This isn't the way to the supermarket. What supermarkets am I passing? I don't see any supermarkets. Why is this person going so slow? Wait, this person has a Subaru that's 4-wheel drive. Huh. There's no snow on the ground. Yet I'm looking at my speedometer. We are going under 20 miles an hour. What is happening? That is my commute.
Oh, well, I got a straight shot on 93, and I get here in, like, you know, what typically would take, you know, forever, what with traffic and all, I can get here in, I think one of the best times I made here in recent weeks was like 16 minutes.
No, that's about what it takes me. I mean, that's about what it takes me from JP.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah, you're lucky. I mean, obviously it's different once you get on the highway. I don't get on the highway to come here, but I'm always stunned. I'm like, how are this many people on the road? Where are they going? And why does it seem like the people who are on the road, who would have a very specific reason to be out, and would have a very specific destination somehow don't know where they're going or are driving like they don't know. Oh, I'm going to take this left. Oh, wait, this isn't the left. Well, maybe I could take this left. No, I'm going to go. Oh, the light's yellow now. Oh, I'm going to stop. That's my commute.
I think people just need to get out. People are starting to snap. People are losing it, and they're just out just to drive. Where they're going, who the hell knows? I also realized something last night in my madness, Chris.
Yes.
After I got chirped on Twitter by a guy who was mad, I recommended The Wire to him. That's a sentence that doesn't even make sense as I hear myself saying it. A guy was mad that I recommended the greatest television show ever created to him.
Yes.
And I know, it's a TV show, like music, movies, things of that nature. It's all subjective, I get that. But we're talking about The Wire, and The Wire, much like The Sopranos or Succession, to me, not something you get to be subjective about. You can either appreciate those shows for the works of art that they are, or you're a blithering idiot. So, with those strong feelings about this show that means so much to me that I think I've now watched 6 times in its entirety, I, like I usually do in these situations, was about to send back some dickish, snarky, rage-fueled response. But I didn't because, as you're quickly seeing here and with all this time on your hands as well, yelling back and forth on Twitter, complete waste of time and energy.
Yes,
it's a dog chasing its tail. It's not productive. And because I had this epiphany of sorts, I just used a gif of the bunk from The Wire shaking his head in disgust as my response. And here was the epiphany. I am so bored and so starved for stimulation right now. I actually would have done just about anything to have this guy or any hammerhead propped up on a bar stool right next to me, yelling at me his terrible take that Lost is better than The Wire. This is what it's become, Chris. We're how many days into this now? I'm so bored that I'm missing things I even hate.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Waiting for a table, waiting in line, traffic, jockeying for a parking space. That's something I know you hate to do, but these are things I actually miss, Chris. Even baseball, which I know weeks ago we said, kind of silver lining, at least no baseball. I'm so bored, and mentally broken right now, like others, that you could talk me into sitting into, today would have been, I think, the second game of this series against the Indians. The Indians were, based on the schedule, should be in town, in the snow, at Fenway Park today. You could talk me into sitting in the worst seats at Fenway, right field grandstand, craning my neck the whole game. You could even talk me into getting up for Sweet Caroline. I'll give you the bop, bop, buzz, and all of that jazz. I'll give you the so good. All that crap. I'm starved for anything like that now.
Routine. How much of this do you feel like is coronavirus related? Well, it's all coronavirus related because that's the life we're living. But how much of this is just your normal life with coronavirus, and how much of it was that you were on Felger and Maz house arrest this week?
No, I mean, we got to do what we got to do. Like, someday it's been, you know, one of us has been home or two of us have been home. One of us has been in here. So that permutation is going to be different. Like, that was my first time working at home all this week. So maybe that exacerbated it a bit because I was at home the whole week. Usually I had been up until this week coming in here for that 4 hours.
That's an element of normalcy, and it gets taken away in a time when there is very little normalcy.
Yeah, so maybe that added to it, because it definitely hit me. Like last night, like I'm so bored, Chris, that I would take getting badgered by an annoying drunk at the bar with a terrible take. I really would. Like, and that is something, and you've seen me, like that's hell. But I'd take that hell over this hell. I really would. I would take a bad take from, even if you weren't drunk, like you yesterday, getting cold feet on Tua Tagovailoa. You're getting cold feet on a guy that you think is the best quarterback in the draft because, he's got a bad Wonderlic score.
That Wonderlic scares me.
So the news
is not just bad, it's the lowest of all the quarterbacks who took it this year.
Well, there's now a correction. This is why I wanted to talk about this anyway, but there was a correction to this. So yesterday, I had this in the headlines, and it became a thing when you were making your weekly appearance on Felger and Maz. He scored a 13 on the Wonderlic test. It's the lowest score, like Chris just said, among the quarterbacks in this year's draft class.
Who took it? They didn't all take it. Just the 12 who took it.
You should be forced to take it. Like, if the numbers come out like this, and that's a separate conversation for something else, like, I kind of find that, you know, terrible that these numbers come out. Like, that should be private and just kept to the teams. But
agreed.
Anyway, if you don't take it, it's like, what are you hiding from, huh? Are you lazy? Laura Rutledge, NFL Network, tweeted late last night some clarification on his Wonderlic score. He took the test in spring of 2018 at Alabama. That's where he got the 13. He took it again at the combine. He scored a 19, with the average score being a 20. So the NFL teams have this information and no concerns. So now that you hear that, he has a 19 You feel a little bit better about the guy that you find as the class of this year's quarterback.
I do
class?
Feel a little bit better, but that's interesting to me. So, where was the 19 yesterday?
And you just think this is spin from the Tua camp?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's just a little weird that everybody had the 13 out there, and then if he took it at the combine, I mean, these teams have had so little ability to contact these guys other than virtually. If he took it at the combine, that's so recent, then why would anybody even bother with this 2018 number? That just seems weird. Like, maybe whoever leaked this messed up. Somehow the 19 didn't get there, but I don't know. I'm a little dubious on that. I'm sorry. I just find it hard to believe that the teams would have a test from him with the Wonderlic that he took in February, but somebody, unless someone's trying to get him to drop in the draft. Now, maybe that's it. You know, maybe that's the old Mike Lombardi. Someone's trying to get him to drop, and that's why they're digging up the 13. That would make a little sense to me.
Well, there has,
a little more sense to me.
There has been this seeming asset devaluation when it comes to this particular player in recent weeks by Mike Lombardi. I feel like something's up there that they're maybe trying to get him to drop like Aaron Rodgers did in the laps of the Patriots to 23. So, and if that were to happen, I think that they should take him.
I would agree.
I have real concerns about his injury history, especially that dislocated hip, which, you know, 30 years ago would be a career ender before the thing even starts. But the kid's got balls, and if you look at those numbers he had at Alabama in, you know, the class of all the conferences in college football, and
yes,
again, it's like 80 touchdowns to 11 picks or something like that in the three seasons that he was there. It's like, it's ridiculous. So, yeah, I think he's worth that risk. But I think you put too much stock into this thing. So let me put it to you.
Yeah.
You like Lamar Jackson?
I do.
Would you have drafted Lamar Jackson? Do you want him to be your franchise quarterback?
You know, honestly, I when Lamar Jackson came out, I had some real concerns about his ability to play quarterback. I didn't see him playing the way that he played last year. And to be honest about it, Jim, you know, they changed the offense and built it around what he does well. You know, when people were talking about the Patriots drafting him, I was projecting him here. But go ahead. What was his wonder like?
13. Like, that's low.
That is low.
And
that
I
is
just,
low.
My red flag for any of these guys, because we all, you know, when this comes up around this time of year, we all end up making something about it, and we all have a laugh if it's a terrible score. But to me, unless it's a single digit, even at that most important position where you have to be the field general, and it is all about smarts and balls, more than anything else, unless you're single digits, I don't look at you as a complete moron. And frankly, have you looked at this? Now, you're a smart guy. Anyone that's ever read your columns, you know, you see the big words that Chris uses. You know, he's the intelligent one here. That's a given. You don't even have to read his columns. Just listen to the show. You know Chris is the smart one.
It's not true, but go ahead.
But Chris, like, you ever look at this damn test? Like, I didn't test well. I was one of the reasons I wasn't a very good student is just because I would get easily bored. Shocker. Not much has changed since I was a teen. You look at this thing, like, I'm not... It's just confusing and annoying, and, like, a lot of it has to do with algebra. Get your damn letters away from math. Letters have nothing to do with math. We don't use it and apply it in real life. I wonder if some of these guys look at this, especially when they've been pampered their whole lives,
yeah,
and treated like gods in college, or really from high school on when they have this great gift of being, you know, of being an athlete. They look at this test and be like, it's not so much a lack of smarts. It's just that they're bored and, like, I'm not dealing with this. I'm like, oh, I don't know. It's almost like a process of elimination. Like, how about B? And I'll hope for the best here and keep my fingers crossed. I just think that some of these guys look at this and are like, I'm not applying myself to this. It doesn't really matter. The hell with it.
Yeah, look, here's where my concern comes. And I certainly feel better about the 19. And you look at historically, I guess there were guys, you know, like Jim Kelly, who got like a 15. And Jim Kelly was obviously a great quarterback.
You got three Hall of Fame quarterbacks who scored 16 or less. Terry Bradshaw, Jim Kelly, and Dan Marino.
Yeah, I mean, Kelly and Marino. I mean, those guys, you know, look, Bradshaw had a great career. It was a little different in the 70s. And he was on, I think, the greatest collection of talent in the history of the NFL. So it was a little different for him. But the reason I put some stock in it, not complete stock in it, is that position. How much of it is being able to process things, retain information, learn information? And so when I look at those lower scores, that raises a little bit of a red flag for me. I'm sorry, it does. That's concerning to me, particularly someone like Tua. Like you mentioned Lamar Jackson. I love what Lamar Jackson has done in the NFL, and I think he is good at making decisions and processing, and he's accurate, and he has good football acumen within an offense that's tailored to him. It's not your traditional pro-style offense. Tua is going to play, I think, for the most part, in your traditional pro-style offense, or whatever passes for that in today's NFL, realizing that a lot of these college concepts trickle up. But the reality is he's a mobile guy, but he's not going to be running around like Lamar Jackson. He's going to make his money throwing the football and reading defenses. And that's where I get concerned. How quickly can you process? And the other part of it is, this is my guy. Don't get me wrong. I love Tua. He throws a great ball. He's accurate. But the Wunderlich concerns me as well, because I look at the receivers he played with at Alabama. I mean, those guys got open at will. You know, I mean, and you can find throws of Tua anticipating and throwing those guys open so he can do it. But it's not like he had to do it all the time. It's not the same as in the NFL, where you're going to have to break down a disguise, read a defense, put the ball in a window, maybe throw a guy open. I mean, when you're throwing to Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, like all those guys, I mean, those guys are probably all going to be first-round picks. The latter two are going back to Alabama. But when you have that type of talent, if you have an issue processing, or you have an issue being able to make decisions quickly and well, that's an easy way it could get disguised when you're playing on Alabama's team, which I've always said. I mean, they're like, I mean, with the talent they have at wide receiver and up front, they're like the 33rd NFL team. So that's where I get concerned. I just would have thought it would have been higher. I would have thought it would have been in the 20s.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Chris is getting cold feet on his favorite quarterback in the class of 2022, a scoring a 13 on the Wunderlich. You want to join us, 617-779-0985. And also, according to Mel Kiper, the Patriots really could be in on Jalen Hurts. We'll get to that next here on the Dudes, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
There's talk of New England. I can't believe it, 23, but there's talk of that. Maybe if they trade out of the first round, they would look at Jalen Hurts. And you have 43 career rushing touchdowns, 5-3 a carry. He gives you that ability to have packages specifically for him. People forget Lamar Jackson was a package quarterback early on. He had packages for him with Joe Flacco starting. So, again, you know, we didn't know what Lamar would develop into as a passer. There's concerns about the ability to see the field for Jalen Hurts as a passer in the NFL, as a starting quarterback. But he improved dramatically in terms of his throwing motion, his accuracy overall, his passing skills look better, his whole mechanics look better at Alabama, and they even look better at Oklahoma under Lincoln Riley. He never has thrown interceptions. He's been good with ball security there.
Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
So that's draft guru Mel Kiper of ESPN, and that was some audio of him on with Rich Eisen on the Rich Eisen Show, which I think is, I don't even know where the hell that show is now. Is that on NBC? Either way. Talking of Jalen Hurts, Oklahoma's Jalen Hurts, formerly of Alabama. And I know that Kiper was on EEI in the last few days, too, saying that there's word out that the Patriots like Jalen Hurts. But at the beginning of that clip, again, references the Patriots, Jalen Hurts. Maybe not at 23, maybe in the third round, because the Patriots, of course, have no second round pick. Thank you very much for that trade for Mohamed Sanu, who Bill ruined as he tried to make a punt returner last year. Anyway, Jalen Hurts, I like. Chris doesn't. You feel like there's some pretzel twisting going on here. Also, as there's devaluation going on, and you feel like with Tua, you feel like Jalen Hurts all of a sudden is getting artificially pumped up here.
Yeah, I do. And look, there's no way that Jalen Hurts is going to go before Tua Tagovailoa. I understand that. But it's just interesting to me that Tua is getting sort of picked apart. And I know I was commenting on the Wunderlich, and that's sort of very specific to me, but he's kind of getting picked apart. I think, you know, there's some health concerns and some other stuff. He's falling, but Jalen Hurts is rising. And I look at it and I think, well, that's so strange, because the two guys were at Alabama together, and one guy clearly beat out the other guy, and it was on the strength of a very specific skill, the ability to throw the football. Tua was a much better passer than Jalen Hurts. He was a lot more proficient. He was a lot more accurate. He was better from the pocket. And so those are the skills you will need in the NFL.
Not to cut you off, but that's been your beef with Hurts, right? Like the ball comes out too slow.
Yeah, I think he relies on his athleticism a lot, which is cool at the college level. But yeah, I don't think he's super fast processing. And I think that he's not consistently accurate. He can be accurate, but he's not consistently accurate. And I think the numbers last year in terms of accuracy, I think his completion percentage was like 70%. I think that was inflated by playing in Lincoln Riley's offense in the run and gun Big 12. And you look at the quarterbacks that have played for Lincoln Riley, they all do pretty well. Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray. That's why Hurts transferred there. And I think he's experiencing that bump in the draft, and good for him to do it. But it's just, I just think this is an example, Jim, of what happens with the draft process and how long it is, and that these teams start to look at stuff and you start to like work hard to look at it upside down, and you twist yourself into a pretzel when it's like, this is stupid. I mean, Jalen Hurts, if he goes in the third round, that's great. I think he's a little bit of a project in terms of a passer. But this idea that like he's rising up the board, there's something with him that teams are saying, well, he's rising. The idea that he could be the starting NFL quarterback, but somehow Tua is dropping, it just doesn't make sense to me. It's particularly, again, the two guys were on the same team. Nick Saban, who's coached in the NFL and is probably the best coach on the planet outside of Bill Belichick, had to choose between these two guys, and he clearly chose Tua. Because and it's the reason he chose Tua. It wasn't because Tua was like a better leader or he was more mobile. It was because they knew they needed to be more proficient passing the ball and getting it to their great receivers. And Tua was head and shoulders the best choice to do that. And that's kind of the way it is in the NFL. You have to get the ball to your playmakers, right? And which guy was better at that? Which guy is better at that?
Tua, for sure. Yeah, I know we disagree on Hurts. I would like him if they took a flyer and if he dropped into the third or fourth round. They have those, sure. What is it, four compensatory picks or three? Four, right? Whatever they have four picks overall, I think, in the third round. If they ended up using one of those on Hurts and he's kind of a, I don't know, a project quarterback, I think that Josh McDaniels would have some interest because of the some mobility he has there. He could maybe project to be a Dak Prescott type. If things don't end up working here with Jared Stidham, who I do think is the plan with, you know, Hoyer as in case of emergency break glass, I don't hate it. I think that there's some real upside there. That being said, if it's not these two guys, one of these two guys, would you be pissed off if they ended up like trying to move up to get Justin Herbert? I don't think that they have enough ammo to maybe do that, but there's talks there. Peter King was saying that Bill Belichick loves him. Overall, should they be looking at a quarterback?
I think that they should be looking at a quarterback, but you can't force it. And I think it's hard to move up. I think if someone drops to them, if a Tua or Justin Herbert drops into their range, you know, where you're saying you only have to go five or six spots, then fine, you know, do it. But to try and get up in the top five or the top 10, first of all, I don't think they have the ammunition to do it. I would also say that if the NFL, if these other teams in the NFL let the Patriots get Tua Tagovailoa, my God, I mean, they deserve to be under the Patriots' heel for another two decades. I mean, you're really going to let Bill Belichick get his hands on that guy? I mean, that makes no sense to me if you're the other teams. So I just don't know if they have the ammunition to get it. I think if somebody drops to them, then sure, you know, take a flyer on it. The bigger thing to me is I think all this quarterback talk, Jim, and what Belichick has said about the quarterback class, saying that there's some interesting depth there, that tells me they're not 100% sold on Stidham. Like, they think he could be it, but they're not sure. And they're not sure on him in the same way that they were sold on Jimmy Garoppolo. And to me, that is the upshot, that is the lead that we're all kind of burying. Like, for them to be sniffing around the quarterbacks to this degree, they're not sure.
Yeah, and there was a real change, I feel like, in how you heard Stidham being talked about just in this last week. Because, and you know, the Pelgrim House were talking about this week, you were on yesterday, like, there's, from the local guys, it's been Stidham's the guy. And then from some of the national reporters, like Ian Rappaport, and others, it's like, well, no, we don't know. And for Bill Belichick to already have the term of affection for him, to call him Stid, well, that means something. But ultimately, maybe it just means, well, he likes him as a person, but as a football player, we still don't know. And that's why they are sniffing around some of these quarterbacks and doing their due diligence when it comes to the draft. And they should be, because if the kid can't play, he just can't play. Or maybe it's just he's not ready yet.
Sure.
You know? So that's why I wouldn't mind someone on a take a flyer on someone. I don't want to see them move up. I recoil when I hear Justin Herbert. You know my whole thing with quarterbacks from Oregon. Oh, God.
Bert Breer texted me after that discussion last night. And you know, Bert's obviously very tapped in. And he made a very good point. A lot of that had to do with
Chip Kelly.
Jeff Tedford, when he was at Oregon and then that sort of went away. Tedford had an Aaron Rodgers. And I guess there's sort of an element of that, too, with Chip Kelly. But the reality is saying, like, a lot of the guys that we were mentioning, Achilles Smith, those guys, Joey Harrington, that it's not necessarily fair to string it all together because you had different offensive systems there.
Well, I am a schoolist. I hold the school again.
you hold the school responsible.
I do. Yeah, there's certain schools I see where if there's a quarterback coming out of, and I know Carson Palmer, but still over USC quarterbacks, like nope, no thanks. Like
what about my guy Rodney Pete? He had a nice career.
Yeah, I guess ish. But Oregon's maybe like the number one.
Okay.
And I know, look, you could say the same thing about Alabama. Like, and I think about that. That sticks in the back of my mind. Sure. Like, who really is the best quarterback that ever came from Alabama? Namath? That's really it.
Kenny Stabler, right?
Was he Alabama as well? Oh, okay. All right. You got Kenny Stabler. Was he?
We sure? I thought he was.
I thought it was just Namath. All right, well, that's another one. Maybe I shouldn't be so harsh in my criticism of quarterbacks from Alabama. But Oregon, that fruity offense, the best one that ever came out of there was Dan Fouts, and that's a billion years ago. Other than that, like Chris was just saying, Joey Harrington, Akili Smith, Hawaiian Tebow.
Yep, Kenny Stabler, no Alabama. Thanks.
All right, then, okay, then it was
Snake.
Yeah, oh, I loved him. That guy that is as good as he was on the field when it came to like doing and drinking. Love the Snake.
I know, he would have been your type of quarterback.
Oh, man, love what any watching any of that, those films on Kenny Stabler, you hear those stories like, and he threw for four touchdowns, and he went out and he did four blondes, and he drank a whole bottle of whiskey. Like, that's my kind of football player.
I would have loved to have seen you covering those Raiders teams.
Oh, yeah. Oh, all that, yeah, violence and doing and winning. Oh, that's man, those were better days. All right, two open lines. You want to join us, 617-779-0985. So if not a quarterback and they stick at 23, what do you want them to do? We'll get to that next, along with your phone calls here on Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Tell me, what is it like to communicate with teams either via, and tell me, is it Zoom? Is it FaceTime? How do you do it?
It's been a little bit of both. For the most part, it's been Zoom. I have had a couple FaceTime meetings, so I've gotten pretty good with the Zoom meetings and everything. So it hasn't been too bad, actually.
Do you miss walking into a facility and shaking hands with Bill Belichick and saying, wow, I'm meeting Bill Belichick?
That definitely would have been cool. That would have been special. But to be here, and it's still an honor, and to be able to go through these meetings, it's still pretty cool. So going through them and doing my best, and you know, whatever happens, happens.
That's Peter King. Justin Herbert, Patriots. I've talked to, like, I just, God, no Oregon quarterbacks.
I like Justin Herbert. I'd be happy if they took him.
He, just because of the size, right? Like, what is he, almost like 6'6", cannon for an arm. You just, you know, looks the part, all of that.
He does, but, you know, I feel like he's different from someone like Jacob Eason, who 100% looks the part, but doesn't have, like, the touch and feel. I thought there was actual progress this year from Justin Herbert in his game, and I think with somebody like McDaniels, he could develop even greater processing ability and feel. Like, I don't think he's one of these, and he's way more mobile than you would think. I mean, he ran a 4.68 40, so he can move in the pocket. He's not one of these, like, statue guys. He's not, like, a Bledsoe 2.0.
Frankie in New Hampshire, first up here on Gasper Murray this morning. What do you want to see the Patriots do in the draft? Do you want a quarterback? Frankie!
Oh, that's good.
But drop the plate.
A little bit of coffee there. What's going on?
Frankie!
Oh, looks right. Like he's making some coffee there. I think that was the kettle. And
yeah. Where, though? Is he at home? It sounded like he was in the car. He's using
well, that's
fine,
like me.
Fine
that's
china
like
in
me
the
when
car.
I'm now, you know, I'm sure you've experienced this, Jim, and I'll digress quickly here. But, you know, if you try and call any sort of customer service thing now, it's like interminable. So, like, that's like me. I put it on speaker, and then I'm doing other stuff. And then all of a sudden you'll hear like, sir, sir, yeah, sir. And I'm like, huh? Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. The hour and 45 minutes. Like, oh, yeah, I forgot I called you. That's what happened to him.
David and Hull on the Patriots quarterback situation. You want to see them draft a quarterback on Thursday?
No, not really, Jim. First off, Gasper, congrats on the move. And President Reagan, it's an honor to speak to you.
Oh, it's an honor that you called, David, yes.
So I'm a big college football guy, one of the few people I feel like in New England that is. And to me, if Stidham was coming out this year, he's only behind Burrow and Tua. That's it. I feel like he's better than Herbert, better than Love. And I feel like you got him as a steal in the fourth round last year. He was awesome at Baylor. He had a down senior year. He had an awesome junior year at Auburn. I feel like if you look at his size, strength, athleticism, he's got everything you would want. I wouldn't waste a pick on a quarterback. But that's just me. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
Thanks,
so,
David.
Thanks, David. And I appreciate your college football fandom. That warms my heart as a fellow college football devotee. I don't know. I mean, I like Stidham, but that senior year, like you're saying, he was great the year before at Auburn. He was good, but the touchdowns, he threw 18 touchdowns and 6 picks. His senior year was 18 touchdowns and 5 picks. Like, he never lit it up. And look, you don't have to light it up. Offenses are different. He was in the Gus Malzahn system. But the reality is, the expectations for him his last year at Auburn were pretty high based on the year before, and he was in, put in a position where people sort of felt like this is a guy who's going to make everybody around him better, and that didn't happen. That didn't happen. And even by Jared Stidham's own admission, you know, it didn't happen. The team wasn't quite as good. The offensive line wasn't quite as good. But the hope there at Auburn was, well, we have Stidham. He'll make us better. And that's not what happened. And so that's sort of my concern. And that's where I would look at some of these other quarterbacks, even like a Herbert, and I would say, you know, he made major strides from his junior year, or I should say probably his sophomore year, to his junior year. And the strides that he made were significant. And you didn't see that from Stidham, from his first year at Auburn to the second year. And that's sort of the difference to me. And look, you never know with college football. Like, I still remember Terrell Davis was nothing special in college football. He was nothing special at Georgia, and he had a brilliant NFL career. So it's not always an indicator, but I would not put Stidham ahead of Justin Herbert in this draft.
Sammy Watkins was that guy for me. He was maybe the best athlete I've ever seen live in person when he was at Clemson.
He was awesome.
Living down in the South. And it hasn't really translated that much in the NFL. He's been good-ish, kind of injury-prone, but I was, when the Bills traded up for him, I was like, smart move. He's going to be the balls. One of the best wide receivers you'll see in your lifetime. And I've still kind of been on that hill, but recently it's like, that's a bad hill to die on. Sammy Watkins just ultimately ended up kind of being like a meh pro. Hopefully I'm saying this correctly. Shukri in Brighton, you're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hello?
Yes, good morning. Good morning to both of you gentlemen, and congratulations to you on Gaspar for the new job at WCVB.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, my pleasure. I think it's interesting what's going to happen with the Patriots at the 23rd pick because, number one, I don't have a whole lot of faith in Brian Hoyer being the backup. And I'm thinking along the lines of if Stidham could, if he is in fact the guy, that I think what the Patriots should do, they should look to add and draft at the skill position because, let's face it, one of the big criticisms that I've had the last few years is a lack of depth of receiver, especially at tight end once Gronkowski had retired. And if Stidham isn't the guy, then possibly look to move up in the draft and maybe draft a quarterback. And I'm not sure about Tua because of the fact that he has a penchant for not throwing the ball away, and that's how he got injured. And I think the hip injury is going to drop his stock in the draft, and especially in the first round, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more concerned about, you know, with Tua, the ankles, believe it or not, than the hip. Look, the hip's a major thing, but he's a quarterback, and if he does learn to get rid of the football, and he's – like, I was watching I'm not going to say film. I was watching YouTube clips of the guy. I'm not going to be one of those reporters who's like, I watch film. I'm not watching any film. I'm watching YouTube clips of Tua. But some of the throws, like some of the anticipatory throws and the accuracy, like I was watching – some of the throws he made in the game he actually got hurt against Mississippi State, where he should have been taken out by Saban. They're up 35-7. But some of the throws, like the touch, the accuracy, the way he anticipates, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. Now, to his other point, I thought that was really astute what he brought up. If you're convinced Stidham's the guy, then shouldn't you be doing everything you can to put the most around him instead of looking at it and saying, well, let's get another quarterback to compete with him?
Well, that's what I looked at the Tooney move as. When they franchised Joe Tooney, which I didn't think was going to end up happening, I immediately thought, oh, they're just trying to solidify the line, because that's, to me, I've always thought this is, you know, all the years of watching football, consistency with the offensive line is the most important thing that you can have up there. So you have consistency. You get David Andrews coming back. I feel like Andrews and Stidham are kind of boys. Before everything shut down, one of the last Celtics games I went to against the Houston Rockets on that Saturday night, the end of February, they're like right up front having beers, enjoying themselves. So, I don't know, you get once they did that, it's like, okay, they're just trying to protect Stidham. It's going to be going back to the old death by a thousand paper cuts type of offense. They're going to protect the kid. That's what I looked at it as. But I don't know. Maybe they just like the consistency of Tooney. He hasn't missed any games in the last 3 years, and that's what it was really.
Well, he's also he's an asset, and do you want to let an asset walk away for nothing? Whether they sign him
that
in just a longer
seems
term
so,
or trade,
it just seems so uncharacteristic for them to pay that kind of money to another guard.
Yeah, I mean, you're right in a lot of ways. I mean, they have a lot of money tied up there with Shaq Mason and Joe Tooney right now on the franchise tag. But when you look at it again, I mean, he had value across the rest of the league, and maybe you end up either trading somebody else there. Maybe Shaq Mason at some point gets dealt, and then you're not spending that money. Or you have Tooney as an asset, a guy who's valuable, and maybe you can get something for him, which, given where they're at, trying to sort of retool this roster on the fly and make it younger, was the oldest roster in the NFL last year. You don't want to let an asset get away for zip, for zero.
All right, so if they stay at 23, what do you want to see them do? We'll get to that coming up next as we have the first virtual draft coming up on Thursday. At least it's still happening. We'll get to that next. Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 of Sports.
You know, it's a little bit different than the way we've done it in the past with the 30 visits and the pro days and so forth. But all the teams are working with the same, you know, constraints. I think we've probably talked to as many, if not more, players than we have in the past. You know, when you're not traveling, you're just sitting at a desk and or sitting in a room wherever we are. You know, it's easier to make a lot of phone calls and get in contact with people rather than sometimes visit a place and, you know, just see the people that are there, even though those visits are valuable and you're able to, you know, get into more of an in-depth conversation and evaluation there. So, you know, we certainly logged a lot of phone time and FaceTime and whatever, you know, video conferencing and so forth. And, you know, again, I think for the most part, we all adjusted to that, you know, tried to take advantage of the opportunity that we have to do those things.
So Patriots head coach Bill Belichick sounds confident that the virtual draft for the Patriots, which starts on Thursday, will go off without a hitch. I don't know if some of his peers feel that way. Was it John Harbaugh? I think it was the Ravens. I've seen a couple of stories pop up in the last few days, or just this week, that some of these teams have real concerns about the draft being hacked, as it's all going to be done via Zoom and teleconferencing on Thursday night, you know, because the hell world we now live in. So Belichick sounds confident, but I don't fault any of these other guys for feeling like this thing could get hacked. This thing's ripe for picking, I feel like. You know, if you wanted to screw with the NFL, one of the biggest corporations in the world, and you know how certain people feel about that kind of thing, like they look at them as the man, they're absolutely going to try to screw with this thing. And just for, I don't know, cheap laughs at this point, it's all I'm looking for. Chaos, a little bit. Some men just want to see the world burn. I'm kind of rooting for it. Yeah, make it really interesting. Like, with the first, you know, you got Roger Goodell. I guess he's doing it from his home in Westchester, New York. You know, he's about to announce the first pick to the Cincinnati Bengals. Goes, the whole thing gets interrupted, and you just got, like, you know, it's like, just the most brutal triple X porn on your television. Like, oh, God. Instead of manhole cover, it's been open. Oh, my God. No, so, like, that would, I don't know. Yeah, I'm an a-hole. I can't help it. I would like to see just that for chaos sake for a couple of minutes if it got screwed with. But, I don't know, do you feel the same about this thing? Because normally, like, the draft is one of those checkpoints on the sports calendar, especially on the football calendar, that I love. Granted, mentally, I haven't really been in the best way here the last week, couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So I'm glad it's happening, but I certainly don't feel the same way about it.
I'm excited about the draft. I always enjoy the draft, and I'm more in sort of the Troy Vincent, Mike Lombardi camp of stop whining. I mean, I understand the security concerns to a degree, and I think what's being left unsaid here, like, I don't think these teams are worried about some random person hacking their draft. I think they're worried about other teams doing it. I think they're worried about some sort of Houston Astros, St. Louis Cardinals type of thing going down, or they're worried about basically your team people, the New England Patriots, hiring some hacker to hack their draft. Like, that's really where this is coming from. I just find it hard to believe that they're worried about, you know, somebody on 4chan or 8chan, you know, hacking their draft.
Anonymous with the Guy Fawkes masks.
You know, I mean, I just find it, not because those people aren't capable, because, oh, they are capable of doing
it. For sure.
But I don't think that they're even, like, really aware of it on that level. I think what they're worried about are other teams, and it's sort of the normal paranoia that goes on in the NFL, and now it's just heightened because the draft is sort of like, I mean, what's to say, you know, I think some of these teams sometimes think, like, somebody's tapping their phone line. That's just the culture of the NFL. I think the thing will go off fine. And if what you're describing happens with Goodell, I mean, yeah, that would be kind of funny. It would be kind of interesting. But the draft is always tough for Goodell because he gets booed. So, I mean, honestly, like what you describe happening is probably not as bad as his normal treatment at the draft, you know?
So if they stay pat at 23, the Patriots, what do you want to see them do? Because I feel like they have a lot of holes, especially on defense.
Sure.
And this is a draft rich in certain areas, especially at wide receiver. But defensively, I like the linebacker group. You can get some speed up front on the defense. You know, before I get to where I would like to see them specifically pick, what do you want to see them do if they stay there?
Yeah, I mean, so first of all, I'll say I feel like if there's not a high-end quarterback there that they're interested in, I'd like to see them trade out. But I know how you framed it, which is if they stay there. So I think, you know, if they stay there, what I would like to see them do is either go wide receiver again or try and jump on one of these linebackers. So, you know, somebody like Kenneth Murray.
That's who I like.
Yeah, I like him. Yeah,
no relation.
And you read some of these things, you know, allegedly you hear some of these things. His interviews have been like out of this world with these teams. Like teams are really impressed with how he presents himself and his leadership. And that's a position where the Patriots lost some folks in the offseason. We know that, right? You lose Jamie Collins. You lose Kyle Van Noy. You lose Alandon Roberts. You're looking at Dante Hightower going into the last year of his contract. So if you could get somebody who can really run and be an impact guy at linebacker, I think that would help. You know, the other thing I would say is you might want to look at, you've seen like Marlon Davidson from Auburn, or if Kinlaw from South Carolina, Javon Kinlaw, were to drop, they could use maybe someone who's a little bit more dynamic or disruptive up front in terms of the defensive line and like a defensive tackle position. So I wouldn't mind that. I know it's kind of strange to look at this team and say you want them to go defense based on the defense, but I think that's, if they stick at 23, I think that's kind of where the value is, you know, because I think you can get a wide receiver later in the draft, and the tight ends are not expected to really go in the first round of the draft. So I think if you can sort of get somebody who's an impact defender in your front seven, if you stick at 23, but really, I don't want him to stick at 23 because I think the strength of this draft is the depth. And I think if you can trade down and pick up two picks, you can get multiple positions filled. So this is the rare year, Jim, where I look at it and say, unless Tua is there or Herbert's there, trade that thing. Get out of the first round, trade down, and pick up multiple picks.
Yeah, the linebackers, so Murray, who, again, no relation, just kidding, is the guy that I like. And everything that you read about him, from the interviews to how good of a tackler he is, his versatility, the speed. Again, you've lost three linebackers here. That's a big area of need. Him, Patrick Queen, LSU, just someone on defense, like someone that's going to be, you know, a big playmaker on defense, which you desperately need. You keep reading about the kid from Iowa, the defensive end, Epinesa, who a lot of local guys, you don't like him.
I'm not a fan.
But he's been mocked by a lot of the local beat guys. What's your beef with him?
I you know, some of the testing numbers for me were a little concerning. I'm just not, he's like one of those, I would call him an Avis player. He tries harder. And that's great. That's great at the college level. But at the pro level, I think as much as we talk about motor, there's some limitations there. And I just sort of question, and I also get nervous with the whole Kirk Ferentz Iowa connection with Belichick. Is that going to, you know, make him look at a guy, overlook some of the physical limitations and boost him up the board because the guy has the right quote-unquote makeup but is not really going to be an impact guy? That guy, he concerns me a little bit. I'm just not sure he's you know, twitched up enough, as they say, to really, like, be an impact player, you know?
I would be even okay with, because they could use some depth at safety, Antoine Winfield's kid.
Yeah.
Which makes me feel a billion years old.
I know.
Because we talked about him for a minute, because he's a ball hawk, that kid, and also versatile. You know, if it doesn't work at safety, maybe use him as a corner. But that was just on the surface, Chris, when we talked about him last week, and I was like, wait a minute, it is. You mentioned it's like Antoine Winfield. Like, he got drafted within the last, like, 20 years, didn't he? Sure enough, yeah, 99 to the Bills. Like, oh my God, I really am just an old relic now. Like, here's Antoine Winfield Jr. But I would take him.
Even as a Zennial, I'm old.
You're not a Zennial.
I am
both. It's the most Gen X show on sports radio. Casper and Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. All right, let's go to Charlie in Plymouth in the Patriots draft. What do you want to see them do on Thursday night, Charlie?
Well, we got a big disagreement already. AJ Epinesa, he's going to be around the NFL for a lifetime. He's going to be a Willie McGinnis-type player. He's coming out with 11 sacks out of Iowa. Got to draft him in the 23rd round. This is a defensive first team now. And in the third round, they can take Adam Trotman, the tight end from Dayton. He's going to be a Dallas Goedert type of player. Dallas Goedert, if
Goddard,
that's how you say it. Yeah, for Philadelphia. Second year in the league, 58 catches, 607 yards. Played at South Dakota State. Trotman's the same, going to be the same type player. So those are the two picks you should take. Absolutely. Defensive-oriented team and tight end. Have a great day.
You too, Charlie.
Thank you for the call, Charlie.
Also son of Colonel Troutman from the Rambo movies. Boo, Jim. Boo. Terrible reference. Tom, and oh, by the way, just on his side, got in an argument with some friends this week because, unfortunately, Brian Dennehy passed. First Blood's the best Rambo movie. Like, let's make no mistakes about it. Like, you know what? First Blood, no. The later ones that they've made recently, which are just pure violence porn, you can make a case for. Man, I don't know if you've ever seen any of those, Chris, just in terms, like, I'm a sick person, but, like, it's the movie, so you can laugh at it. But if you like just violent gore, like, it's just nonstop killing of everyone. Men, women, children, everyone gets killed in those new Rambo movies. But it's funny because the way that they do it, it's like almost cartoonish. But First Blood is the best of the Rambo movies. Make no mistake about it. All right, got that off my chest. Tom and Newton, quickly, go ahead.
Yeah, hey, guys, hope you're doing well. Hope you're staying safe these days. And, you know, congrats to you, Gaspar, on the new gig.
Oh, thank you.
I just wanted to weigh in on just kind of the impact like this virus here on sports, you know, particularly, you know, the Red Sox. It's sort of a two-pronged take. The first thing, Jim, is something you were talking about on Twitter earlier in the week, like this Globe article, you know, about like the Patriots masks that they brought back, like kind of alleging that they're like these shoddy masks. A couple of days later, you know, Mass General comes out and says, no, we're fine, we're using them, we're good to go. And, I mean, look, I'm not saying, like, the Globe has this big-time agenda or nothing, but, I mean, for people who follow the coverage closely over the last however many years, I mean, there always has, you know, felt like there's, like, this extra specter of analysis on, you know, the crafts and kind of poking around in their sock drawer than Henry or the Sox get. I mean, look, you know how these rich guys are. If you do enough digging, you'll find some stuff, but it just feels like it tends to be a one-way street there. I don't know. The other thing, just real quick, I mean, look, everybody's hurting these days, you know, the restaurants, the small businesses, people, families, I mean, everybody. But it feels like the one entity, if there is one, that sort of dodged a bullet here has been the Sox. I mean, before this whole crisis here, I mean, you know, other than like the Tom Brady, you know, saga there, which still honestly hasn't, you know, felt like it's sunk in. But the only thing anybody was talking about was, you know, just the Red Sox kind of falling apart and, you know, the Alex Cora and just everything there. And, I mean, look, there might not even be a baseball season this year. If there is, it's going to be, you know, abbreviated and kind of modified such that, I mean, you know, people aren't going to put that much stock into it anyways. So, I mean, they could easily skate into next year, make some moves, fix some things, maybe even bring Alex Cora back. And they might make out like bandits. What do you guys think? Thanks.
Tom, we'll get to those thoughts right after the Sports Hub headlines because it's pretty interesting, too, because Mookie Betts could come back, too. He could never play literally at all a real game for the L.A. Dodgers, and you could see him back in a Red Sox uniform next year if this is to keep going the way that it's going. So we'll get to all that coming up next year and give you your answer for your great phone call. Thank you. Right after the Sports Hub headlines here as we get to hour number two of Gaspar Murray.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.